Hello and welcome to Savor. I'm Annie Reese.
And I'm Lauren Vogelbaum. And we have another bonus episode for you today.
Bonus. And I want to say, Lauren.
Yes.
That there are two things about this interview that we are about to run with Elliot Moss over at Buxton Hall Barbecue that I want to share.
Okay.
One, I'm really glad we got this interview because it was one of those things where I think I was involved in a 70 email thread.
Oh, like, yeah.
Just trying to schedule. And it was the one that almost got away.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's really hard to pin down chefs. I mean, they're busy humans. They've got a lot of stuff going on.
I don't know what it could be. The stuff we're interviewing them about, perhaps?
Yeah. Elliot Moss is the pitmaster and chef at Buxton Hall, which is a barbecue joint in Asheville, North Carolina, that we got to go to. If you listened to our Nostalgia, Comfort Food, and Carolina Q episode, you heard him talk about that kind of thing. But yeah, he talked a lot about, just lovely traditions that he grew up with and why he wanted to start that restaurant. And yeah, we thought it was a really terrific listen. We enjoyed the conversation ourselves, so we wanted to share it with y'all. So here it is. Would you tell us what kind of barbecue you're doing at Buxton?
We do I'm just called Carolina Whole Hog. I'm from the eastern part of South Carolina, which is, you know, in line with eastern North Carolina, where whole hog is done, cooked over wood, charcoal, and dressed with the vinegar pepper barbecue sauce. I've brought that style of barbecue to the mountains of North Carolina. And we use pasture-raised hogs that are raised by my good friend Larry and Kathleen that have Vandell Farms, and it's right down in Old Fort. They pasture-raise all our pigs for us and have been providing them for us for the past 3 years.
But that's not the only type of sauce that you offer, right? There's a whole sauce bar involved.
Yeah, we have sauces for people that want a different style. I lived in Columbia, South Carolina for 5 years and kind of got a taste for the mustard. So we have the mustard sauce, and we have a couple of red sauces that we put on our barbecue chicken and ribs and then offer it if anybody else wants it for their pulled pork or hog or french fries or whatever else they want to put it on.
Where did you learn to barbecue? Back in eastern North Carolina?
South Carolina.
I'm from
a town called Florence. It's near Myrtle Beach. My grandfather was a welder and taught my dad how to weld. And we grew up with homemade barbecue pits that we would cook hogs that my other grandfather would raise early on. And then it just became a family tradition that we would cook hogs around the holidays for Thanksgiving and Christmas and have a big party and have everyone over and pick on the pig. And those are just some memories I had my whole life as a little kid. And I started out cooking food for a living, and after a few years decided I wanted to open my own restaurant, and I couldn't think of anything else but barbecue that I wanted to do. So that's why I do barbecue.
Some of the rest of the menu, though, you've got a lot of really iconic dishes on there. What are your influences when you create those other mains and sides alongside your whole hog?
Well, I worked at my first job in the restaurant business was at Chick-fil-A. I worked there for 8 years. I knew that I wanted to have something on the menu to compete with the barbecue so we didn't run out all the time. And everybody loves a fried chicken sandwich. So we have a chicken sandwich that is a little homage to my time spent at Chick-fil-A, and it's a really popular sandwich for us. We sell a lot of them. Bon Appetit named it the best chicken sandwich in the country a couple years ago. That really helped solidify it as the cult status kind of thing. We do catfish. My grandfather had a catfish pond. I grew up catfishing, and fried catfish is just really good. And we do a cured smoked fried catfish. We cure the catfish first, smoke it on top of the pig, and then cool it off and then fry it. And then we put a Western North Carolina style mop on that and serve it on a bun with a piece of American cheese and lettuce and some pickles.
Oh my goodness.
That's kind of our hit. Now people don't order the catfish because it's a barbecue place, but it's one of my favorite dishes. We have a double cheeseburger because sometimes I want a cheeseburger.
Heard that.
we use some nice local grass-fed beef for that, and super yummy. As far as the sides and all, I like to call them grandma influence. You know, I come from a chef's background. After Chick-fil-A, I worked at several different restaurants, but I moved to Asheville to work at a restaurant called The Admiral, and I worked there for about 6 years and got a James Beard nomination right before I was leaving to come open Buxton Hall. So I approach my food, I guess, from a chef more than anything, and it just happens to be barbecue related.
Would you tell us about the hash?
Yeah, the hash is a byproduct from making barbecue. You don't really see it much other than South Carolina. I think there's a few places in North Carolina around the border and a few places in Georgia around the border, but you know, there might be more out there. You don't see them like you do in South Carolina. Every barbecue place pretty much has hash of some sort. And I think it started as a way for them to use up leftover barbecue. Ours is a process of all of the fatty bits that we scrape out of the hog. We confit those overnight and save all the fat that's rendered. And we butter our buns and fry some things in that, make gravy. We save all those bits and, you know, a week's worth of cooking hogs. We have a lot of those bits, and we mix that with stock that we've made from pulling the bones. And we put some ground up pork liver in there for some good flavor. And a few other secret things, and we cook it, you know, by the fire overnight, and we blend it up, and it's kind of like a meat gravy. The word hash is a terrible marketing name. People confuse it for like a potato or corned beef hash, but the best way I could describe it over, you know, without seeing it, it's a gray, or it's a brown kind of gravy, super meaty, kind of tastes a little bit like Brunswick stew or a chili. But we eat it over rice and serve it over rice here at Buxton, and you can get it as a combo with the barbecue. Some old timers put it over their barbecue like it's a barbecue sauce. It kind of has that flavor. And a lot of people eat it over grits in the morning for breakfast. One old man told me one time that barbecue is like cocaine and hash is like crack. So as far as the addiction level. Once you taste it, I have people tell me all the time, man, I think about that hash all the time. So I'm like, you should come try it if you haven't. Hash is a very, very yummy thing. It's the most soulful, and it's the thing that I'm the most proud of on the menu for sure, just because of all the love we put into it. And most places just throw all that stuff away, and you can put some time and make it taste really yummy.
We have some more of our conversation with Elliot, but first, we have a quick break for a word from our sponsor. And we're back. Thank you, sponsor. Now, back to the interview.
People have opinions about barbecue. What's it like running a barbecue joint? I mean, do you get weird flack from different folks? Do you get nods from folks? Does anyone ever give you shit about the kind of barbecue that you're cooking?
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, I watched a lot of TV food shows growing up as a kid, and I could see the rivalry in barbecue all across the country from afar. And I definitely knew going into opening a barbecue place that I would have people coming here saying that this isn't barbecue, or Texas is better, Kansas is better, or your barbecue vinegar, what is that? That's not barbecue sauce. I knew all those things going into it. So I felt like I was prepared. And, you know, we do get those things. And barbecue is a very regional thing, and people like the barbecue that they grew up eating. You know, I know I do. That's why I cook the vinegar barbecue. It's just what my palate was raised on. Not that I don't like other styles, but that's just, you know, like them coming here saying Texas is better. They were probably raised on a little neighborhood joint in Texas, and that's their favorite barbecue. And you'll never find another one like your first favorite barbecue.
Why do you think that these foods do have such like a sense of timelessness and nostalgia?
don't know. I guess it's such an old food ways here. People have been barbecuing foods for a long time. And they're hard to find. You know, people don't do it the right way as much as they used to. Starting to become more of a trend now, for sure. But 10, 15 years ago, it was really hard to find good barbecue. And I don't know. Food is nostalgic, all of it, really, I guess.
Absolutely. I guess, speaking of doing it the right way, how do y'all source your wood?
Derek Watson is my wood guy. We've been working with him since the beginning, and I was buying some wood from him before we opened. Our wood is sourced by Derek, and he's not out cutting down trees just for us. He keeps his ear to the horn, and when a new development in the area is happening and they're cutting some trees down, or if a storm knocks some trees down, he goes and gets them and cuts them up for us. It's mostly oak around the mountains of North Carolina that we're getting. There is some hickory and some cherry, but we mostly use red and white oak.
I mean, you said that you had worked for Chick-fil-A for a number of years, but how did you decide to make the food industry like your industry, like your life?
Well, I guess I come from an art background. As a child, I always thought I'd be an artist, and I feel like I'm pretty artistically creative. And, you know, I didn't really know what I wanted to do for a living. My dad was a welder. I knew I didn't want to stand in no hot welding shop. So, you know, I pursued some art, and music was always a big part of my life, collecting music and just listening to it. And I don't know, I started cooking at Chick-fil-A, and I did it for a long time just because I needed a job and it paid pretty well. And I guess it taught me a lot about, you know, how to work in kitchens and manage people and systems and, you know, quality of food and efficiency. I mean, it taught me a lot how to work in the kitchen. And then when I decided I was ready to leave Chick-fil-A, I just felt like it'd be easy for me to get a job in a restaurant because I had some experience. But no one really wanted to hire me because of Chick-fil-A experience. They didn't really see that as, I guess, real experience. I don't know. So I was watching a lot of Food Network, you know, just cooking at home, cooking for my mom and dad and girlfriends and seeing their faces, I guess. And, you know, coming from a family where food is just always tried to force down your throat for love, you know, it's just my family always wanted to feed me. And then I got a job as a chef, and I worked in the open kitchen, and I could see, you know, people eating food and smiling. I could see instantly if they liked the food or not. And I think all artists really just want gratification and for the work that they've done. And cooking food, you can see that instantly if somebody likes it or not. And that kept me around for a long time, just cooking food and seeing people happy about it and creating plates and dishes. And then opening Buxton, I think it went more of a kind of a big installation art piece for me. I got to create this whole space, you know, the colors and things on the walls and what the kitchen's going to look like, what the menu's going to look like, and shirts ideas. And it's a lot of places for creativity to happen in opening restaurants. So I hope that answered your question.
Yeah, no, that was great. How was Buxton born? How did you meet up with Mirwan?
Me and Mirwan met at this supper club in Greenville. He'd been to the Admiral a couple times, but I'd never really said anything to him, just kind of saw him from afar. And I was planning on opening Buxton with one of the partners from this place, the Admiral. And we had a piece of property across the street, and we were pretty close to getting it open, and we decided the last minute to not do the project, and we ended up selling the land, and there was a lot of hype behind it. And Mirwan called me one day and was like, "Hey man, why aren't you doing Buxton?" And I told him kind of the short long story, and he said, "Let's have a drink." And he said, "What if I help you try to get this done?" And I was like, "Well, you know, we'll talk about it." And couple of years later, we, you know, opened Buxton Hall.
We're going to pause the interview here. We've got a little bit more for you, but we also have one more quick break for a word from our sponsor. And we're back. Thank you, sponsor, and back
to the interview.
So how did you wind up in Asheville from South Carolina?
I moved to Philadelphia from South Carolina with a friend. We both helped open a restaurant there called The Wig. It's still around. It's in Columbia, South Carolina, across from the State House. We just decided to get out of South Carolina, and we moved to Philly for a little while, and he ended up moving to Asheville, and me and my wife stuck around, and he called me one day and said, "Hey, man, I found this little spot. You want to come be the chef here?" And I was like, "No." I was trying to move to Charleston. I was trying to move to Charleston, and my wife at the time was doing makeup for a company called Matt Cosmetics, and she was waiting on a transfer. She was working up there, and she ended up just seeing if she could get a transfer to Asheville, and she did, and we decided to move here and open this place called The Admiral. And like I said, I was there for about 6 years. I've been in Asheville since 2007.
Why have you stuck around in Asheville? Like what's cool to you, I guess, about the scene there?
Well, to be honest, when I first moved here, I hated it. I hated it so much. Like, why did we move here? I didn't have a car. I was living in Philly. Public transit was pretty decent and not so good here. at least 11 years ago, way before Uber and all that stuff. But out of necessity, I stuck around here because I had the job. And then, you know, towards the end of my time at Admiral, Asheville had changed a lot. You know, I met a lot of people here. There's always folks moving from all over the country here. So it's just always meeting new folks that are artists or weirdos or good weirdos, you know, in a good way. There's just a lot of interesting people here for as small of a town it is. There's a lot of tourists, but you can kind of see who the tourists are. And once you can look past the tourists, it's a small town. And there's a lot of good people here, and everyone's doing interesting things, whether it's art or growing vegetables or pigs or making pottery or clothes or jewelry. There's just a lot of craft stuff here that makes it fun. A lot of entrepreneurs. The nature of the mountains is really great. A lot of waterfalls, rivers, you know, lakes. There's tons of hiking trails. If you're in the bikes, they're just being outside foraging the mushrooms. It's like paradise here. The weather is great. You know, I don't like being too hot, you know. I don't like being too cold, but the winters are pretty bad. But most of the year, it's just kind of perfect weather. We do get a lot of snow sometimes in the winter, but, you know, we get a lot of great warm summer days that aren't melting your face off, you know, just right. Yeah, and it's a good location. You know, Atlanta's not too far. I'm from South Carolina, so I can go see my family without it being a big hassle.
Speaking of some of those other entrepreneurs and artists and producers, who else do you collaborate with for Buxton, but I suppose in general?
Dave Bauer, we've been working with him for, you know, years and years, even before Buxton opened. He has a farm called Farm and Sparrow, and they do grains. They grow grains and mill their own flours and corn and mill their own grits. And we use some of their products here. We do brunch every week, and we have their grits on the menu, and they're super coarse and yummy. And he also has a restaurant here called Old Souls with Brandon Reusing, and they make pizza and pasta, and they use the flour that they're growing and milling and use organic stuff. It's really yummy, but we've done some things with them in the past, for sure. There's farm-to-home milk. There's a Amish family up the road that is making milk, or, you know, milking cows and selling milk, and they deliver it to us, you know, once or twice a week, and using some local milk in our pastries and ice cream, so it's real nice. You know, a few things like that. A lot of farmers here. Vandale Farms, I think I mentioned them to you already, but, you know, we spend we buy 12 to 14 hogs from those guys a week, and it's been nice to see their family grow with ours.
I read the words marinated vanilla lab cheese on your website, and I don't think I saw that on the menu, but what on earth is that? Please tell me about it.
That was something we just did. You could have only gotten it here. There's a creamery here called Looking Glass. And
yeah, we talked to them cheese. Too.
Yeah, they make this cheese called Chocolate Lab, and it's kind of like a tome that's rubbed with cocoa and I forget what else they rub it with. But it's an aged cheese, and then they rub it and let it sit. And the chocolate is from the rub that they put on it. But they just gave us a wheel without the rub, so it was just like a naked lab. And we just marinated it in some olive oil and orange peel and garlic and herbs and chili and served it with some bread at room temperature.
Annie's like mad about that. She's in the background just making faces. small question. What do you think the future holds for Buxton?
Well, I hope we're a destination at this point. As long as I think people keep coming to Asheville, Buxton should still be here. I don't want it to go anywhere. We've got about 70 employees, and I'm going to try my hardest to keep them employed and keep on going. We do a lot of traveling for different barbecue events. So if you can't get out to Buxton Hall, we do travel. I've been to Texas a few times and plan on going back again a few times next year and some different cities across the country. But we'll just keep cooking whole hogs and making great desserts and yummy sides, cold beer.
Is there anything that you would like to speak to that we did not ask about?
I don't think we talked a lot about our desserts, but, that's something that's, pretty different and special for us is, we have a pastry chef, Ashley Capps, and not too many barbecue restaurants have pastry chefs or a pastry team. So something pretty special about us. And they do some good work down here, use a lot of the lard in the pie crust and make Jell-O out of the pig's feet for kids' Jell-Os, and we do some weird stuff down here.
And this brings us to the end of the interview, to the end of another Saturday fight night, which is not really a fight or a night. I don't know when you're listening to this or if you're fighting with anyone, but I do like a catchy name for things. So I'm working on that. And I'm going to answer a burning question I know you all have.
Oh, yeah?
Because at the top, I mentioned I had 2 points.
Oh,
about this interview.
I wasn't even paying that much attention. I feel like a really bad co-host now. What is your second point?
No, it's good. It built suspension. I'm sure everyone was like, but what about that second point, though?
Perfect.
It is. We were determined to talk to someone about barbecue. And he was that. But also, he expounded on this whole artistic view of food that, for me, was personally enlightening on this trip.
Yeah.
And I wasn't expecting that, and it was a lovely surprise.
Yeah, we talked about that in the, was it the Once in a Lifetime Meal episode? Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's a sort of poetry to all of it. So we would love to hear what you think about all this. Let us know. Get in touch.
Yes, you can do that via email, electronic message. Our email address is hello@saverpod.com.
We're also on social media. You can find us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at SaverPod. Thank you so much to Elliot for speaking to us today and to Landis Taylor and the whole team over at exploreasheville.com for helping us get in touch with him. And to our co-executive producer here at Stuff Media, Christopher Hasiotis, for helping us get in touch with them. Thank you, as always, to super producer Dylan for putting out 3 episodes a week now instead of 2. That's a bonus for you, friend. Thanks to our other co-executive producer, Julie Douglas, for all of her good advice. Thanks to you for listening, and we hope that lots more good things are coming your way.